Man, I can't say nothing about our music, but I know it isn't classified. I don't consider it as R&B, like top 40 rhythm and blues. I don't consider it as strictly blues, you know, itself. Like Noel digs rock, and it comes through, you know, straight English rock. Like, it's very hard. And Mitch is like on a jazz kick, like, you know, Elvin Jones and so forth. And I like blues myself, you know, but I like all kinds of music, and it just comes out some kind of way. But I wouldn't call it blues. It's best not to call it anything, because, you know, because then you get yourself uptight and you get us uptight trying to play what you think that we're.
We're back with hour two of our world premiere of the new Jimi Hendrix box set, which will be in stores on September the 12th. Now, disc two of this four CD collection begins with a real gem. Jimi Hendrix playing the title track from the Beatles' just-released masterpiece, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. He's doing this at the Seville Theater in London, but what makes this performance really special is that Sgt. Pepper had only been out for a few days. And guess who was in the audience that night? None other than George Harrison and Paul McCartney. The story goes like this.
Jerry Stickles, who was the road manager for the Experience throughout their career, told me a story of how the Experience were in the dressing room 3 days after the album had come out. And before they went on, Jimmy said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to open with Sgt. Pepper, and here's how it goes. And they literally put it together as quickly as that.
And he also had his own little record player there. He had a little portable record player, and that's what he was playing it on.
Yeah.
There's actually a photograph of him in backstage with the damn record.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he loved that. There was a, you might call it audacity, but I think he truly loved the Beatles' music, and I think that, you know, someone of his stature and was able to connect with what they were trying to do with Sgt. Pepper right away, I think that made a real deep impression on him that, you know, another door was open to him in terms of creativity. And it, you know, what perfect place to do it than the Savile Theater, which is run by the Beatles' manager.
And right in front of the Beatles, he blew them away. I mean, I think to this day they still think about it and talk about it. And I think John said it, audacity. And, it shows the master of the instrument. The man was complete master. He knew what he was doing. There was nothing that was going to stop him. And it was like a compliment to the Beatles, but at the same time, can you imagine the shock value of sitting there and hearing, you just put the damn record out, and here's this guy coming on stage and blowing you away with a version that's just like killer. I think McCartney was a huge fan of Jimmy's. In fact, if it wasn't for McCartney, Jimmy would never have played Monterey.
It's exactly a great point. I mean, Chaz Chandler had always said that, you know, the Beatles were among his earliest supporters of Jimmy and would always talk him up to the press as being really significant and an important addition to the London scene. And Paul was on the board of advisors for Monterey and, you know, made it a point of saying that Jimi Hendrix had to be there.
there's also a slight sort of technical end to the Beatles story and the influence there. I was very fortunate enough to have worked with the Beatles at Olympic Studios. I cut a couple of tracks of them, worked with George Martin, who was an absolute gentleman and a genius. And we were fascinated with the Beatles, and we asked him, hey, you know, that phasing that you got, how do you do that? And he told us how to do it. And so we went away and scratched our heads and said, that's how they do it. Okay, well, George told us how to do it in mono. We're going to do it in stereo. And we did it in stereo, and we figured out how to do it and played it for Jimmy one night, and he totally lost his mind. I remember he was sitting behind me. He fell off the couch, and he was sitting on the floor. He said, man, that's like my dream. How did you do that? Play it again, play it again. And we had to keep playing it and play, and of course, he wanted phasing on everything after that.
Little Miss Lover, where have you been in this world for so long?
Along with the Beatles, another artist that had a big impact on Hendrix was, of course, Bob Dylan.
I think Jimmy respected and admired the freedom that Dylan seemed to embody. I think he liked the same thing in the Beatles and was open-minded to that influence. I think he had an admiration for Dylan's the lyrics and the poetry of his lyrics, and I think he loved Like a Rolling Stone. I mean, it became a song that he reinvented for himself, and it has such tremendous power. And I think the version at Monterey is probably the finest example of that, because the blues that he is able to interject into the performance takes it to an entirely different place from where Dylan had started with the song.
I also think this is something that Jimi Hendrix was a master of doing. He could take anybody's song, whether it be a Beatles song or a Dylan song, and make it his own. And in fact, the version of All Along the Watchtower and the versions of any of the Dylan songs, Dylan to this day says this is the way I think it should be played.
As I said before, it's really groovy. I'd like to bore you for about 6 or 7 minutes to do a little thing. Yeah. Excuse me for a minute. Just let me play my guitar, all right? Right now, I didn't think by Bob Dylan. And that's his grandma over there. That's a little thing called Like a Rolling Stone. Ooh. Once upon a time, you dressed so fine. Through the bumps of diamond in your prime. Oh, didn't you? People call, say, but where, dog? You're bound to fall, you thought they all. Well, couldn't you? You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Look at you, but now you don't talk so loud. But now you don't, baby, seem so proud. If I happen to be scrounging, yeah, you're an ass. But you know you only used to get juice and air. Nobody here to taught you how to live on the streets. And now you just gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise with the mystery tramp, but now you got to realize he's not selling any alibis. As he stands in the vacuum of his life, and he says, "Hey, baby, would you like to make a drinking, thinking that they got it made. Yeah. Exchanging all precious gifts and things, but you better take your diamond ring. I think you better pawn it, babe. Yes, I know I missed the verse. Don't worry. You used to be so amused at the pulling and rags and sweet talk, daddy, you go to him now, he calls you. You can't refuse. When you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. You're invisible now, you got no secrets to conceal. How does it feel? Oh!
Of course, the Bob Dylan song most identified with Jimi Hendrix is the electrifying version of All Along the Watchtower, a song that Jimi Hendrix truly made his own. Once again, Eddie Kramer.
Well, he has a tremendous emotional intensity. I mean, made even better by the fact that, you know, he's the world's greatest guitar player. I mean, that goes without saying. And you know how he felt about his own vocals. He hated them. But yeah, I think in this circumstance, he sang it great. It suited his style. It suited his the timbre of his voice, and it suited his range. He was able to deliver the song really, really effectively. I think there's a couple of things in here that we can try and identify. One, the chord sequence was very attractive to him. Jimmy, I think, firstly, he would respond to the music, you know, the chord sequence, how it would strike him and how he could possibly get his hands around and do something with it. I think that's essential. Then there's the lyric content, which is fantastic. I mean, it's the imagery very much attracted Jimmy. And then, you know, once he got into the song, there's all the rhythmic changes that he did. You know, Brian Jones actually turned up on this session at one point when we were recording this. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, and he tried to play piano, but he was a bit out of his mind, I think, and it didn't work out, so Jimmy kicked him off the session and went back to recording it. Wow. But it's Dave Mason playing acoustic guitar and Jimmy playing acoustic guitar on the original. We cut it in England just before he came to America. Cut four track.
Are you talking about the one that we're used to hearing, or this one here?
The one we're used to hearing, the one that's the final thing.
Mitch Mitchell.
And it was just Jimmy, myself, and Dave Mason playing rhythm guitar to start with. I think Noel was over the road at the pub. Well, actually, I know he was. And so really, the essence of the backing track was put down really damn quickly. And then it started expanding from there, where Jimmy had the idea, or knew in his head, of roughly how many thousand overdubs he required.
But it's just interesting the way it was all built up. And then, of course, to do it live was very tricky for him. I mean, he didn't do it live very often. And so that's why this performance is such a monumental one.
Thank you.
new Jimi Hendrix Experience box set when we return on the SFX Radio Network.
Buy the new Jimi Hendrix Experience 4-CD box set at Best Buy and get your ticket to exclusive online content, including rare video and screensaver at BestBuy.com. Go to www.BestBuy.com or see the display in-store starting September 12th.
I'll have a 16-ounce soda.
I'll have a 48-ounce bucket of cola.
Notice how we're drinking more soft drinks than ever?
Yeah, I'll have a drum of pop.
A lot more. And probably not brushing right after. Chew on this. Chewing Trident after sugared soft drinks can actually help prevent cavities from forming. When you're not free to brush...
Can I just stick my head under the spigot?
Chew on this. Trident.
My sinuses? You're talking pressure. It starts small, gets worse, and by 5 o'clock, it is not a pretty sight. How do I cope? At the very first sign of sinus pressure, Sudafed 12-Hour. Absolutely.
Taking Sudafed 12-Hour at the first sign of pressure releases pressure and keeps it away for a full 12 hours.
That's 9 to 5, and then some.
For all-day sinus relief, take non-drowsy Sudafed 12-Hour at the first sign. Use as directed.
I wonder if these shoes really match my dress.
Does my hair look right, or is it a mess?
Will my jokes get a laugh, or will fate be cruel?
One thing I know, my breath is cool.
Surt's powerful mints have more than just a powerful mint taste. They've got Retsy. Your breath feels powerfully clean, powerfully fresh.
Come on! Now when I put myself together, I put aside the doubt.
Look out, world, I'm stepping out.
Surt's powerful mints in the sleep pack. Be certain with Surt's.
Honey, I don't think the kids should watch so much TV.
I grew up watching TV. It didn't hurt me.
But I've heard that it can have negative effects.
I think it's okay if they watch cartoons.
Yeah, well... You would think that.
Yeah? Well, you're a party pooper.
Boogerhead.
Doo-doo brain.
When adults don't have the answers, they can feel as frustrated as kids. ConnectForKids.org on the web has thousands of resources for helping kids in your community. ConnectForKids.org. Guidance for grown-ups.
A public service message brought to you by the Benton Foundation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Good night, Prevotella. Good night, Actinomyces. Good night, Streptococcus.
Germs. Millions of them. They've been building up in your mouth all day, and some of them can even lead to the gum disease gingivitis. Say goodnight with Listerine. Just 30 seconds of Listerine before bed kills germs, even germs that can cause gingivitis. Use Listerine every night and go to sleep with a healthier mouth. See your dentist. Use as directed when brushing and flossing aren't enough.
You're listening to the Jimi Hendrix Experience on the SFX Radio Network, where you can now find us on the web at sfx.com.